You made it. Got lots of visitors today, and we're delighted that you've come. Hope that you'll be comfortable in our midst. Several who've been away traveling, enjoying vacation, are back, and several others are away on vacation, and we're glad that you have had the opportunity to share with us today. Some of you may be wondering, am I look kind of lost? I'm always lost when my wife is not with me, and she is caring for her mom in Alabama. I'm not sure exactly when she'll be home, but glad she's having that opportunity. There's several of you who are here for, perhaps for the very first time. Hope that you'll be comfortable. If you have questions, please don't hesitate to ask. If it seems like that I exit quickly, that's the goal. There are several guys, about 120 young men, that are supposed to be meeting at Shacamack this afternoon, State Park, and Lord willing, we'll be able to study with them. And if something slips out from Zephaniah or Haggai or Zechariah or Malachi, that's been my focus and concentration throughout the week, because that'll be our course of studies as we work with these young men for the next little while. So glad to have the opportunity to share with you this morning. I heard this lesson by a preacher back in, yes, West Virginia, and it just kind of caught me, and I thought, you know, I need to think about that, and I think about the kind of excuses that sometimes I'm tempted to make for my sin. And hopefully it'll be helpful as you think about it as well, as we think about the fact that in our culture today, it just seems like we just often just come up with, well, you know, what'd you expect given my environment? I mean, given the bad circumstances, given all of the difficulties in my life, given what is done to us as a group, how else would you expect me to respond? And so oftentimes we will use our environment for an excuse. Mr. Spafford could have done that. Michael, I didn't know you were going to do that. Mr. Spafford lost all his kids in a tragic accident. The boat went down in the Atlantic. But his wife was able to make it onto Europe, and she sent a telegraph back saying, saved alone. And as he is traveling over to be with his wife over to Europe, supposedly the shipmaster said, it's estimated that this is where your family perished. And so supposedly on that same night, he wrote those lyrics you just sang. He knew about tragedy. He knew about a difficult environment. And yet he chose to look for hope and for home. Hopefully we'll do the same. You know, there are people that just grow up in just horrific difficulties. There are people who grow up in what we'd really call bad environments. And you know, Dan gave me a tape, and it's up here, by the way. It's a series of CDs. If you'd like to know more about some of the things that Dan Auerbach shared in that, we could share all those. But you know, as I thought about talking about Marlon and Mary and Morris and all these other people who chose to rise above adversity, I thought about, what about you? As I think about this audience, as I think about heartbroken people who have lived through some very, very difficult environments, I thought, you're the story. I don't have to tell you about other people. You're the ones who've come through really difficult environments, and you've chosen to serve Jesus in spite of really some tragedies that have come. And so a lot of us can know about cruelty and degradation, and we can choose to blame everything in our life in the future based on, well, you just don't know what's happened to me. You just don't know where I've been. Or we can choose to say, well, I know where I want to be in Jesus. We can choose in spite of very difficult circumstances. And then there are others who've had a really good environment. Had a mom and a dad that loved them and cared for them, corrected us and challenged us. And so we have both of those kind of environments. But I want to ask some questions briefly in regard to bad behavior. Is bad behavior excusable simply based upon our circumstances or based upon our environment? Excuse me. Let me just hold off for just a second. Does a difficult environment excuse my behavior? Am I accountable to control myself? Is my environment an excuse for my sin? I'm thinking about school teachers right now. You know, and I'm thinking about those students who say, yes, but. And the teacher is saying, are you not responsible for your own behavior? Well, but my... And so often in our culture and in our schools and our homes, it's, yes, but you just don't know what my environment is. Is my environment an excuse for my sin? Well, let's just look at some folks in Scripture. Let's think about some people who had some pretty good environments. When we look in Luke chapter 15, you'll remember two sons of a father, and in the picture Jesus is painting, God is the father. And here's a son who has everything. I mean, when he comes back, if a man's got servants, he must have something. If a man's got a best robe, he must have some other robes. If a man's got rings, if he's got fat and calf, he must have a good bit of this world's goods. And when you think about this man, he's got all of this before him. He's got a father that loves him, a father that even though he stinks and he has robbed his father, he comes running out to greet his son and hugs his son. I'm asking you, environment, did it control this young man's choices? Did the fact that this young man being raised in a family of love and kindness and all kinds of stuff, did that guarantee that this young man was going to make good choices? Was his environment the dictate for what would be his life's choices? Or could he, in spite of all that good environment, decide to be a rebel and run off and waste his father's living? Was environment the determining factor? When we think about money and we think about stuff, I don't know of anybody who had more than Solomon. When you think about once he becomes king, he has 666 talents that just come in regularly every year. And that's of gold. I mean, that's billions of dollars just pouring in every year. But as Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods. And his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God as the heart of David his father had been. He followed Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. So Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely as David his father had done. Was it a bad environment that Solomon grew up in? Was it the fact that he just didn't have things? Was it poverty that caused Solomon to make all these terrible choices? And so as we think about and continue, we notice that on a hill east of Jerusalem, Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable god of Moab, and for Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. He did the same for all his foreign wives who burned incense and offered sacrifices to their gods. The Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice. Although he'd forbidden Solomon to follow other gods, Solomon did not keep the Lord's command. Was this an environmental problem? Or was this a heart problem? Did Solomon make choices in spite of an excellent material environment? You know, I'd suggest to you, Solomon applied his wisdom for the nation better than he applied it to himself. You ever notice folks like that? If you want to ask somebody for wisdom, some people just really have excellent wisdom that you can gain a lot from. But then they just don't seem to connect the dots in their own life. Solomon was really good at helping other people see what they needed to do, and yet failed to make good choices in his own life. And so as I asked Daniel to read in Genesis chapter 3, when you think about, was environment the problem that caused Adam and Eve to rebel against God? Could you have had a better environment to grow up in? When you think about all that is given them, fellowship with God, everything that they needed, but you notice once they choose to sin, we started the pass the buck mentality early on. It's this woman. It's your fault, God, because you gave me Eve. And then Eve at least has the devil, who's extremely crafty and deceitful, to lay blame for her choices. But it wasn't an environmental problem. They had a right to choose. And good environment is no guarantee that we're going to choose good behavior. In fact, a good environment is a great help, but we can still choose to be drawn away. So God says, don't blame this on me. He says, let no one say when he's tempted, I'm tempted by God.
For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does He Himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he's drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. Am I accountable? Do I choose? I have a choice, and I can't escape the consequences of my choice. It's really important for us to understand, to own, and to share with our children. So we've seen some good environments. Let's think for a moment about some bad ones. Can you think about somebody whose brothers just hated him? And they just contemplated, let's kill him. And then they thought, well, killing him won't get us anywhere. Let's sell him. Would you call that a good environment? I don't think Joseph was thinking that was such a good environment when he was in that pit and when he could hear his brothers talking about how much they hated him. And so they sit down to eat their meal. And they look up and they see a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels are loaded with spices and balm and myrrh. They're on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, what will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he's our brother, our own flesh and blood. The brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern, sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. Would you call that a good environment? You're not dead, but you've been sold because your brothers hated you. And then when he gets to Egypt, he's got a woman who lies about him. He's got a woman who wants to seduce him, and it's his boss's wife. And he says, no one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you're his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? He's making an excellent choice in a really bad environment. So would this bad environment, due to unjust accusations, then excuse Joseph? Couldn't he have just said, well, she's probably not loved by her husband. The boss will never know. Don't I deserve some happiness? After all, look at my environment. But now he's thrown in prison due to the cover-up on the part of this wicked Egyptian. But then maybe this is an even greater temptation for him. Now he gets promoted. Now he gets, thanks, Hank, if you want to bring that up, that's fine. It's not about water, but I appreciate the effort. I think the greater temptation for Joseph is not what's happened in the house. I think the greater temptation is now, after all that unkindness. Oh, you're bringing the Lawsons too. Thank you very much. Excuse me just a moment. I appreciate all the kindness in regard to the throat condition. It's mostly what we used to call nerves. Did you ever have that? Brett, did you ever have that nerves when you get up here? So let's think about it now. He's been treated for since he's 17, now 30, he's given the promotion. And now he is being asked, we need your help. Oh, thanks. Egyptians hadn't seemed to be concerned about him. They hadn't seemed to come to his aid when he was unjustly accused. But now, we need your help. Joseph could have said, there's going to be a famine. Starve. Why should I care about you? Why shouldn't I just rebel against you all? Or why shouldn't I just take this new position and live life large? After all, I deserve it. All of those things would be potential excuses for what might be considered a bad environment. Let's think also about another man who had a great environment, but that environment was going to change drastically based on Satan's choices. God says to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? For there's no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil." What's Job's situation? Does he deserve that kind of suffering? Is it because he's wicked? Now, that's what his friends are going to tell him. When we think about what his wife then says, are you still holding on to your integrity after he's lost his wealth, his health, his family? Curse God and die. He says, "You're talking like a foolish woman. Shall we accept good from God and not trouble?" In all this, Job did not sin in what he said. Everything material taken away from him, physical health taken away from him, in all of that, he did not sin with his lips. He did not allow the adversity of his environment to cause him to betray God. But his friends tell him, "You're bad because of your environment." And we tell people, you're bad because of your environment. We tell people, well, we expect you to behave badly because after all, you don't have a dad at home. You don't have anyone that loves you at home. So we expect you to act out. Is that what you tell your students? Is that what you tell your children? Let's think about some lessons then that we can learn in regard to that. Environment may influence behavior, but it is not responsible for choices. That when I sin, I'm accountable. The soul, each one of us shall give account of himself to God. So what God says in regard to our choice to sin is it's rebellion. But this people has a defiant and rebellious heart. They have revolted and departed. In Jeremiah 5 and verse 1, Jeremiah is supposed to go through Jerusalem and try to find one righteous person. Just one. And God says it's because of hearts that people are not serving me. They've chosen not to serve me. And so God asks the people of Moses' day to choose life. These people's dads have all died in the wilderness, and these children are being asked, "What will you choose?" Moses says, "I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that I've set before you life and death, the blessing and the curse. So choose life in order that you may live, you and your descendants, by loving the Lord your God and by obeying his voice and by holding fast to him. For this is your life." Bad environment, wilderness, parents who are rebellious. The second generation could choose life even though their fathers had made disastrous choices which cost them their life. In our culture, in our homes, in our personal experiences, we can choose life despite very adverse environments. And so may I suggest briefly that we need to dig deep into God's promises. Know that your labor's not in vain in the Lord. Sometimes the devil tells you, you're never going to make it. Give up, give in. It's never going to work. You can't do it. You need to know that your labor's not in vain in the Lord. You need to know that regardless of your circumstance, regardless of how hard it is right now, it will be worth it. And hopefully this will be helpful as well as we think about Hebrews 13. To keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have, because God has said, "Never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you." So we say with confidence, "The Lord is my helper. I will not fear what man shall do unto me." Someone was trying to console me earlier today. And they said, based on the way things are going in Congress, it looks like you won't get arrested about weddings here. And I said something a couple of weeks ago in regard to the choices that were made, that it could well be that I'll be arrested or this church may experience a lawsuit. I really hadn't given that another thought. But I appreciate the checking on the laws and the concern that I don't get thrown in jail because I teach about what God says about marriage. But the Lord's not going to desert me. You know, when Paul writes in that second letter to Timothy, he says, everyone has deserted me. Everyone. But the Lord stood by me. There's times in your life when things go terribly difficult, and maybe none of us are aware, and none of us come to your rescue, and you're thinking, everybody has forsaken me. No, excuse me. God has not forsaken you. Regardless of the environment, and regardless if you lose all your kids and all your wealth and all your health, God had not forsaken Job. But those helpful friends of Job tried to convince him otherwise. Don't forget God's promise. Don't forget God's provision. And let's remember then that God has precepts that ground us. Scott, it was Psalm 73. You knew where it was. Asaph is saying, look, everything's going great for everybody else. Wicked people are prospering. They have all money. They have all the health. Their cattle get all bread. And everybody's fine in the wicked family. But the righteous person, it looks like everything is going to dust for us. And Asaph says, my feet nearly slipped. I just about fell off the precipice because I was looking at things from down here. And until I step back and look at things from God's sanctuary, until that point, I could not see what was true. And so he had to step back and look at God's precepts, God's truths, God's statutes, and understand what was really happening in the light of an eternal reality. But if you haven't read Psalm 73, you don't have that. You don't have that anchor. You don't have that rootedness. You don't have that steadfast, planted by the water kind of faith. And so when environments are terrible, it is trust in the truth about God that gives us hope. So as my wife likes to say to her students, good choice, bad choice, your choice. And that is true regardless of whether the child ever has seen his dad. That's true regardless of whatever medication he's on. It's true regardless of whoever's mean on the playground. Good choice, bad choice, your choice. Regardless of environment. And so for those of you who have recently gotten married, I've tried to encourage you. Choose once, choose well. And as Joe was baptized into Christ a little over a week ago on Thursday evening, I fumbled through Luke chapter 9 in verse 62. But Jesus said to him, no one, after putting his hand at the plow and looking back, is fit for the kingdom of God. You see, it's one thing to get dunked in that water. But it's a whole other thing to understand that that is part of a commitment to the King of Kings. And that I'm going to serve that King the rest of my days, regardless of what happens. And for those of us who've had our hands on a plow, not maybe many of you have, for those of us who've had our hand on the plow, looking back is disastrous. And when we've got our hands on the plow of the kingdom of Christ, we dare not look back, and we better get busy plowing. That's what life in a service attitude to the King is. It's not just making excuses about why I'm not here, why I'm not plugged in, why I'm not serving. It's about getting a hold of the plow and plowing for Jesus. And let's quit making the excuses. So Joshua is going to, after they have all said wonderful things, oh yes, we're going to serve the Lord. Oh yes, we know our dads were bad. Oh yes, we know the environment was terrible. Joshua says, choose this day whom you will serve. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Now you can choose all these other gods. You can go all over the countryside and choose all these idols around you. Or you can choose to serve God. But choose. And stop making excuses. That was added by me. And so we need to think about that. And so my conduct is under my control. And when I see the divine power that is granted to us, everything pertaining to life and godliness, and I see the true knowledge of Christ, who called us by His own glory and excellence, for by these He's granted to us His precious and magnificent promises, so that by them you may become partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world by lust. So for this very reason, then, we need to apply all diligence. In your faith, supply moral excellence. And in your moral excellence, knowledge. And in your knowledge, self-control. And in your self-control, perseverance. We can apply with diligence self-control. And we can quit making excuses and start owning it. I at least appreciate guys when we're playing ball that will say, my bad. They will take ownership. It was a bad pass. I fumbled. I failed to pass. I missed the shot. Own it. And let's not make excuses. My friend Joe called me Thursday. Jerry, John, I blew it. I remembered at 20 till 9, 9 o'clock is supposed to be our study. And I'd like to blame all the wonderful young people who were having a grand time Wednesday night till, well, let's just say late, downstairs. But the fact is, I went to bed too late and I forgot the study on Thursday morning at 9 o'clock. And I apologize to these. I hadn't apologized to you directly, Jerry, but I had the other two. I blew it. Who do I want to blame? I failed to be at a responsibility I had committed to. I'd even set it up. And so we need to own it. And we need to exercise self-control. I need to stop making excuses and I still need to start making excellent choices. And so my prayer for me and for you is that our love may abound still more and more in real knowledge and all discernment, so that we may approve the things that are excellent in order to be sincere and blameless until the day of Christ, having been filled with the fruit of righteousness which comes through Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God. Paul is asking the Philippians to choose the excellent. Don't just choose that which is sinful. Choose excellent. Don't just choose that which is a little bit less than sinful. Choose excellent. Young people, may I challenge you with in regard to media? Choose what's excellent. And so in conclusion, people come to God in the midst of really difficult times. The Thessalonians, I know we badmouth the ones who were the Jews, who were the ones who rejected God, but there were a lot of really good Thessalonians, and we forget about them a lot of times. Paul says, our gospel did not come to you in word only, but also in power and in the Holy Spirit and with full conviction, just as you know what kind of men we proved to be among you for your sake. You also became imitators of us and of the Lord, having received the word in much tribulation. This is great tribulation. They received the word in much tribulation with the joy of the Holy Spirit, so that you became an example to all the believers in Macedonia and in Achaia. For the word of the Lord has sounded forth from you, not only in Macedonia and Achaia, but also in every place. Your faith toward God has gone forth, so that we have no need to say anything. For they themselves report about us what kind of reception we had with you and how you turned to God from idols to serve a living and true God, and to wait for His Son from heaven, whom He raised from the dead. That is Jesus, who rescues us from the wrath to come. You know, when I think about the fact that I have been blessed with such a good environment growing up, I have had an easy life. I ought to be way on down the road in my devotion and service to God than I am. But then I think about you. And I think about the heartaches. I think about the hard, difficult things. I think about the alcohol abuse and the drugs and all the immorality and all of the idols that have just been a part of your life. And you're standing up trying to serve Jesus. And I think, thanks be to God that there are people who love the Lord in spite of a difficult environment and they want to serve God. Do we get discouraged? Absolutely. But shame on the rest of us who've had a good environment and have not been more along the way and more helpful for those who are making a difficult journey. So as we think about that, after Paul's been stoned, left for dead in Lystra, we think about the tribulation. And as he's coming back through Lystra, Iconium, Derbe, he's strengthening the souls of the disciples, encouraging them to continue in the faith. And he's saying, through many tribulations, we must enter the kingdom of God. That word tribulations, best definition I can give for you is pressure. Thlipsis is the Greek word. It is difficulty. It is stress. It is pressure. Do you ever just feel the pressure to just do what the devil wants you to do? Do you ever just feel squeezed by life? Paul is telling people who come to Christ, it's going to be hard. If somebody's going to tell you, oh, being a Christian is going to be easy, it's going to be wonderful, it's going to be hard. And if somebody sold you a bill of goods and told you that once you choose to serve Christ, everything in your life is going to be wonderful and grand, they lied to you. It'll be hard. Now, it'll be wonderful, it'll be blessed, but it'll be difficult. And so Jesus says about these great tribulations that first century Christians were experiencing, he says, these things I have spoken to you, so that in me you may have peace. In the world you have tribulation, but take courage. I have overcome the world. So I ask, will you choose to serve Christ in the face of a difficult environment? Will you? Jared came up with a neat little graphic there. Found it somewhere. He's got a story to tell. He'll get his chance to tell it next Sunday night, Lord willing. There are people who have been mangled physically, emotionally, in every way. And they have looked for rescue, for salvation, for deliverance, and they have found it in Jesus. And so I'm asking you, please make excellent choices and please call me on it. When I start making excuses, when it's just a failure, say, Alan, own it. May I ask you to do the same? If you've not been serving the Lord like you promised you would, we own it. Stop making excuses and be baptized into Christ for the remission of sins. We'd invite you to do it even now as we stand and sing.